There are books all over the place about what constitutes good to great leadership. It's a recent phenomenon, but it's been studied now for at least a couple of decades. But Jeremiah is concentrating on what constitutes failed leadership. And what he has to say is worth listening to because it applies to any nation state that fails to serve and unite its people. Jeremiah himself, he doesn't provide a definition of leadership, despite the prophetic promise that God will raise up for David a righteous branch, and he will reign as king and act wisely and do justice and righteousness in the land. That's a nice general statement that frankly never comes true for Israel following the kingship of David. What Jeremiah does that is spot on is talk about failed leadership. And he says that they are the ones, the failed shepherds, who have destroyed the community that they were entrusted to care for in the first place. Rather than gathering the people together for a common enterprise that leads to a thriving, they have scattered and driven away those who depend on their leadership, pitting one tribe against another tribe. They have not tended to the sheep that they were entrusted to care for. And this failure is matched in many of our contemporary institutions today. Jeremiah's context, just so we put this in clear, stark contrast, is the 6th century BC, 600 years before Christ. And what's going on in the land at this time, evidently, is that the leaders of Israel have sold out to powerful vested interests. Nothing new there. The temple priests are getting incredibly rich. They are considered the royalty around also the kings and his temple court. And they are accumulating huge wealth. And they are simply perpetuating their own power and privilege, while common people in all of the other tribes outside of Judah fall further into debt and poverty. They also ignore the growing violence that is spreading throughout the nation of Israel and the adultery in the land. Why are these mentioned specifically when other sins are not? For this simple reason, adultery in the ancient world meant you not only affected your immediate family, but you affected your entire clan and the entire community in which you lived. Everything depended upon a cohesiveness, and murder and adultery break down that cohesiveness. And that is a symptomology of what is going on at the top of the ladder, so to speak. So everybody is falling into this category of failure. It's not just those that are the shepherds, but it's also the sheep. The problem is the shepherds are ignoring this growing violence. They're not attending to it. They're ignoring the growing inequality that is springing up in their midst, and they're not doing anything about it. And it says further in Jeremiah that there is this growing prophetic class that has sprung up, which is prophesizing falsely about how everything is okay. Think of it as their version of the social media. All the talking heads out there with a point of view. None of them getting it right. Now, it is always tempting to draw a straight line or a parallel to our time and place, but that's a little dicey if you do that, because it ignores the dramatic change in the context of what was ancient Israel and what is the modern United States of America. Today, here and in our globe, our interests are interwoven with individualistic and consumeristic demands in the context of global markets, right? A very different situation from the time of Jeremiah, when there were no global markets. There was none of that. And a very me-first culture orientation that we have, which complicates any correlation between then and now. They didn't have a me-first attitude back then. They had a we-first, my tribe, my nation, but not a me-first. Today, our leaders can hide, you see, exploitation of workers, for example, in third world countries behind a claim to be giving consumers what they demand. We want cheaper goods so that each one of us can demand services that ignore the impact that it has on the common good. For example, every time I buy clothing that is made in China, and I don't even check the labels, to be honest, anymore, I'm helping my wallet and I'm hurting the common good of American textile workers. In this sense, I too am scattering the flock, and I too am not tending to the flock that God has entrusted to me. In this reality, I too am scattering rather than gathering together. And with this insight, it is no longer only about that nebulous and nefarious them apart from who I am. I am also part of the problem. And even though we cannot draw a direct equivalence between then and now, the text of Jeremiah does push beyond generic pronouncements concerning leadership failures. The people who are being hurt by the failed leadership are defined by the first person singular pronoun, my. Those suffering from failed leadership are the sheep of my pasture, my people, and my flock, says the Lord. God has a stake, you see, in this. God's people are hurting and are hurt, and the hurt that the people feel is the result of the failed leadership, and it has produced a problem now for God. Our text doesn't give us any leadership principles in terms of how to correct all of this, whether they be constructive or destructive. He doesn't say this is what a good leader exactly looks like or a bad leader exactly looks like, but he says this is the outcome of bad leadership. The outcome is a scattering, an outcome that is destructive in the sense that it divides us one from another, and that is not a healthy thing. It's not about laying out a pragmatic, or practical plan for developing new leadership. That's not what Jeremiah is doing. Rather, Jeremiah simply announces God is paying attention and that God will take all of the people, not just the righteous, not just the sinful, but everybody into exile. That's what's going to happen. In fact, earlier in Jeremiah, it says there was not one righteous person to be found. Everybody is going to pay for failed leadership. Not just some, everybody. The failure of leadership, he says, extends from the greatest to the least. It's not simply about corruption at the highest levels. It's about an acceptance of that corruption as a way of life by everybody else. It doesn't matter if we intended for this to happen or not. The outcome is still the same. People are scattered and battered and bruised and afraid. And it makes no difference if we intended that or not. It's the question of being scattered and battered and abused that has to be addressed, because any continuation of the status quo becomes a continuation of the evil that God will not abide. In terms of our text, God's first focus is on the evil doing and the failure of the leaders, the shepherds. Woe to the shepherds who are destroying and scattering the sheep of my pasture, he says. The shepherds are the ones who have driven away God's people. Now, this act of scattering and driving away is at the same time described as simple neglect. Kind of like the rich man and Lazarus. Remember, he just walks by Lazarus. He doesn't actively hurt Lazarus. He just ignores him. He just ignores the poverty that he sees right outside of his door. That's what God is upset with. And everybody's guilty of it, for failing to attend to the needs of the people that are entrusted to all of us and to care for. It's kind of like saying, thank you for your vote. I'll be back in 2, 4, 6 years to ask for it again. But now I have to attend to special interests and lobbyists. I now have to attend to a class of being economically and so forth that you and I are not a part of. Lack of attention. An act of scattering and driving away go hand in hand. Sins of omission and commission overlap. It's not enough to say, oh, I didn't do anything to Lazarus. Yeah, you did. You ignored him. And God says, it's just as guilty. You're just as guilty. God will attend to this evil doing. And that's what he calls it, evil doing. And the implication is that God is going to attend to it. And to put that mildly, it means it will be an undesirable outcome for everybody. It will involve, as Jeremiah so eloquently puts it in the very first chapter when he sets out what God is going to do, it's going to involve a plucking up, a pulling down, a destroying, and an overthrowing. Jeremiah 1:10. And it is repeated throughout the entire book that bears his name. Now, if this is sobering, good. It should be sobering. Failed leadership means one thing. It means exile. The existing leadership in Jerusalem cannot create a new chapter. They cannot move forward. The devastation is too thorough. The creative capacities to think differently outside the box have been squandered. They had their chance. It's over. And now depleted and thus exiled is the only recourse available. What is needed is a new leader, clearly. And that leader, God, will be God. But that's a little comfort to those who are standing on the verge of exile, isn't it? Little comfort. It's a promise that to this day still awaits its fulfillment, doesn't it? Still we await the arrival of the Lord. But it will be a future that is far different from the current economic one, in which the rhetoric of creative destruction and disruptive innovation are no longer the terms that describe good leadership. Because we know that automation and globalization has been bringing prosperity to quite a few people. It has, clearly, in our society and in our world. But to many, to a lot of people, there has been no benefit whatsoever. And they are depleted of hope, and they are scattered in our midst, no less than those who were exiled during the time of Jeremiah. Gathering and tending, therefore, cannot be made to dovetail with any philosophy that espouses a survival of the fittest, folks. That is not God's will. The hope-filled future promised by God is not here yet. I wish it was. Our leaders still continue to scatter and do evil, but the promise is that God will not let that have the final word. The only problem is we still wait God to fulfill the promise to this day. How long, O Lord, cries the psalmist, how long, O Lord? Maybe that's because it's still on us to do the changing. Maybe we cannot sit comfortably in the pew and expect God to do everything on our behalf when we have voices, when we have legs and arms, when we have minds of our own. Maybe God is expecting us to do something too, which we really don't want to do, which is to change. Change is not something we like. The future, though, folks, is still open, and it is still to be written. And I reject the doom and forecasts of doom that come because I still carry the hope that in some way God will make a way where there appears to be no way. But we will see, won't we? We will see. As Jesus said, you must be as wise as serpents, folks, and as gentle as doves today. It's not okay to be ignorant. It's not okay for yourselves, for your communities, or for your nation. You and I have a responsibility to find out what the truth is, really. And that takes some digging and some real work. It can't come from just a headline. That's meant to sway one way or the other, but takes real digging and listening to people of differing opinions, waiting and understanding that our view of reality is but that. It's my view of reality, but there are people who stand over here who have a different view of reality. Why shouldn't I listen to them? Why shouldn't we listen to one another? We don't have to always agree on everything. That's not the point. The point is we have to come together. That's the point. Otherwise, we bring exile on ourselves, right? If anything out there offers hope, hold on to it, Jeremiah says. And this is really kind of cool, I think, because the book of Jeremiah can put you into a bit of a depression if you just read it like Job at first. But at the end, toward the end, this is what Jeremiah does, man. I think this is amazing. As they're being led out into exile, The land is no longer theirs. It's now the Babylonians. King Nebuchadnezzar rules. And everybody's going into exile. And you know what Jeremiah does? He buys a piece of property from his uncle in the land that they're about to be exiled from. He buys a piece of property. And by doing that, he says to his people, as the prophet, God will bring us back to this land. And God will. And God did. And it looked very different. It's almost as if a generation had to die out, though, before the new land could be realized again. Just like in the Exodus. Moses led a generation that murmured in the wilderness, didn't trust in the wilderness, and God finally said, enough. It's going to be your sons and daughters, not you, that go in. Or even your grandkids, but not you. That ought to be a sobering thing for us. Amen.